Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This week on Dr. Drew After Dark, does the CP get involved in any way with your sexuality?
They call me the human vibrator, baby.
You got the shakes because you're in chronic withdrawal.
I got the shakes already, so I'm...
Oh, you got the shakes. You're halfway there.
Avoid licking buttholes of strippers.
Of strangers.
In general. That's great.
Yeah. Don't stigmatize limited, strippers.
Yeah.
Just
you're
strangers
so
in
right.
general.
I'm sorry, strippers.
Welcome to Dr. Drew After Dark. Please be advised that Dr. Drew After Dark may contain sexually oriented content and be unsuitable for young children.
Hey everyone, welcome to Dr. After Dark. Appreciate you being here. 818-253-1693 is that voicemail phone number. And today my guest is Josh Blue. Josh, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
Josh is making the rounds. He's a comedian that happens to have CP. I think last comic standing is where you really sort of established yourself.
Yeah, you won that. 2006. So it's been a while. That really launched me onto the scene and been going ever since.
At that point, were you doing sort of some comedy or open mic stuff?
Yeah,
or?
I was pretty big in the college circuit.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, like the year before I won, I had like 40 gigs, college gigs.
That's great.
And then I was doing clubs and featuring all around.
So a lot of comedians sort of gave up on the college scene because of all the sort of the censorship and whatnot.
Yeah.
And that's where you flourished. What did you find? Why do you
well,
think?
Well, I've always had the gift of walking the line.
Yeah.
Where you think I'm going to say something horrible, but I don't.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it. I want to, but I'm not going to. And then the truth is I don't give a shit. Like, I'm going to make you laugh.
Yeah. How did this happen to you? I don't mean the CP. I mean the comedy.
I was like, well, you're a doctor. You should probably know something about how it happened to me.
A little bit.
How did what happen?
Comedy.
Okay, comedy. I started in college, actually. I went to the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington.
I had read that, and I thought, isn't that where the Weinsteins got attacked by the students?
Oh, yeah. It's,
were you
it's
there then?
No, that wasn't me.
Was that?
I swear.
But I mean, were you there before or after that all happened?
Before.
Before, okay.
Yeah.
Did that surprise you when that happened?
No.
Really?
I mean, it's a cool college.
Yeah, but that was crazy. There was a mob, and the police essentially told these two professors, I'm sorry, we can't keep you safe. They're going to kill you. Well, do what you have to do. It's like, what?
I actually just did the keynote speech this year for their commencement.
Fantastic. So, congratulations.
What was
the topic?
They tried to bury us, but they didn't know we were seeds. And that is the most evergreen shit I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Very hippie.
And you grew up in Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
Were your parents hippies?
No. I mean, I guess kind of, but my parents are world travelers. I was actually born in Cameroon.
Oh, wow.
West Africa. My dad was teaching English over there.
Oh, how interesting.
So, I've been...
It's a little hippie-esque.
Yeah,
going around
sure.
the world teaching.
For sure, yeah. Back in the 70s, you know.
Oh, so, that's hippie then.
Yeah, for sure. So they definitely had a touch of that, but we never went camping or nothing.
Right, right. Where else did they, as a kid, you must have thought they were dragging you a little bit, but where else did they take you?
I lived in Senegal for a whole year when I was 15, which was like a life-altering...
Why?
It just changed my perspective of the world and like having a disability. I was really down on myself. You know, you don't know where you fit in the world. And then I got to go and live in Senegal for a whole year, and it just kind of put everything in perspective for me. And like, I realized even though my body moved like this, I was very lucky to be alive and have the things that I had. And it just, And I just took off from there.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was really cool. And I speak French, and I also speak Wolof, which is a native language of Senegal.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Well, Cameroon is French-speaking.
It's French-speaking as well.
They have une très belle langue, en fait.
Oui, oui, c'est vrai.
Oui, c'est comme en France, comme en Paris.
C'est pas le même, mais presque.
Presque. L'accent, c'est presque le même.
And then, you know, my father speaks 13 languages.
Oh, my goodness. That's incredible. So, I've always been so jealous of people that do that.
Yeah, I've just grew up being around languages. And
you've not mentioned your mom yet. Was she a teacher also? Or
she's a librarian. She speaks English.
do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. I'm the youngest of four. Yeah. And they all speak at least three languages as well. And
interesting.
They're not all the same between the siblings.
And were they also, they were going around the world with everybody, right?
Yeah, and doing their own things as well. But being the youngest, I kind of got to experience the whole thing, you know?
Yeah. And you loosely described yourself as hippie. Are the other two hippie-ish? The other two kids?
No. They're...
super straight.
Yeah, I mean, they're all language teachers.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, so my brother teaches English in Vietnam. My sister teaches French in Minnesota. And then my other sister teaches Spanish.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And my father was a French and Italian professor.
Oh, interesting.
And then I do comedy. Hey!
but still, what led you to get up on the stage that first open mic?
You know, I've always just been told that I have this quick wit, and I mean, I just know I do. I've always just had the
were you the kind of kid that would make a classroom laugh kind of thing?
That was my first audience for sure. I remember just being able to snipe little things at the teacher, and it's hard to get in trouble when the teacher's laughing too.
You know? Right. Do you think they gave you a little pass with that because of the CP?
I was the only palsy kid in the class. Yeah. So I was one of the first disabled kids to go through the Minnesota public school system.
Really?
As like a, you know.
Why would they put cerebral palsy in any kind of special? Let me explain what this is. Cerebral palsy is a technically congenital, you know, it's at birth, it's noticed. And it is a movement disorder. It's a motor disorder. It is not a cognitive disorder. And people superimpose expectations of cognitive dysfunction because there's some speech and motor stuff with it.
Right.
But I know a ton of CP friends that are bright as hell.
Most palsy people are smarter than most people in the room.
I've wondered that.
Very observant, and it's just because our brain was damaged somewhere, but we find another path to get to the same sort of conclusion.
To compensate.
Yeah, and I mean, I just very in tune, I like to say. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's so many varying levels of palsy.
Right, yours is pretty mild.
Yeah, mine's mild. There's people that, you know, I mean.
They can be bad. I mean, it can be really like a lot of spasticity and stuff.
And again, that goes back to the Senegal thing and seeing, have the right amount of palsy to survive.
But, you know, most comedians remember sort of the moment they got hooked on comedy. Did you have one of those sort of moments where you thought, oh, this is it?
Yeah, I mean,
what were you doing?
I was actually in high school, and the teacher, I forget what class it was, but I think looking back now, the teacher was probably hungover. And he was like, I'm going to play this video. And he played Bill Cosby himself. And I know that he's not the great person anymore, but in that moment watching that guy on stage, I just remember going like, I could do that. And I don't think very many people see a polished comedian and go, I could do that.
Yeah.
But I just really felt like I could.
I've heard that before from some performers, things like that, where they go, that's me. But if you have cerebral palsy, it's got to be an interesting sort of a stretch.
Well, the thing is, I also at a young age realized that people were going to stare at me just because that's human nature. You see someone moving differently. You see someone 7 foot tall, you're going to look at them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just how it goes. What I realized is like, if you're going to stare at me, I'm going to give you something to stare at.
Mm-hmm.
So
lean into it.
Yeah, and then I just kind of went with it and went over the top and just got comfortable being disabled. And like, if you have a problem with my disability, that's on you. And I'm not afraid to verbally smash you.
So looking at Cosby and thinking this is my calling, Norm Macdonald had a very funny joke about comedy. I saw him open one time with this thing about Bill Cosby. He goes, God, I love Bill Cosby. I love everything about the man. I fashion my life, everything I do after him. He's just the greatest thing. I admire him. Everything I'm doing, it's Bill. I loved everything about him except his comedy. Anyway, and so I thought it's so funny.
I miss Norm, man.
Oh,
he was
yeah.
the best.
Oh, yeah. So do you know what we do here? We kind of talk about things and we answer calls and we take emails and things.
Yeah.
And here's something about Dexter Mathorfan. He got super into it, taking Corsedin, blah, blah, blah. Take two boxes and hallucinate for 8 to 10 hours. Do it 2 to 3 times a week for 2 months. Anytime I have DXM since then, I throw up within an hour. That's interesting. Also, even seeing a box of it triggers a strange response. Pins and needles. Even while typing this, those symptoms, though I haven't tried it in 5 months. What's going on? Dextromethorphan is cough. You know, it's essentially a sort of a cough syrup.
Okay.
And it will cause sort of dissociative hallucinations and has various different levels to it. It's has opioid effects too, and at least kappa opioid effects in very high doses. And people used to do this stuff. That's why they don't let you buy lots of it at the pharmacies anymore. And there's a lot of autonomic, your body reacts to these big doses of this drug, and it leaves behind sort of an autonomic response. So the sort of Pavlovian response, when your body sees it, your body triggers. Your body has that response again.
Your body's going, hey, man, don't do that anymore.
That's what it's doing.
That's not a smart idea.
That's exactly right. Benders and poop problems. I've been on a bender since about 15. I'm now 28. Nowadays, I have guttural issues where it feels like I'm going to shit myself. When I do run to the bathroom, I have loose stool and mucus comes out. I'm sure this isn't normal, but I'm also too prideful to say something is wrong. Symptoms include lower abdominal discomfort, loose stool, mucus, blah, 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 blah. Dude, you've been drinking for 13 years heavily. What do you imagine is going to happen?
Again, your body's saying, don't do that anymore, man.
Thank you, Josh.
You're welcome.
But there's something we always said about the old aphorism about alcohol. It's the shits, the shakes, and the fits you get from alcohol. So people get diarrhea from alcohol. It affects not just obviously your liver, and you're going to end up with advanced liver disease, my friend, and your brain. You can easily damage your brain with this much alcohol. But the colon eventually gets inflamed too, and so you get the shits. You get the shakes because you're in chronic withdrawal, and you get fits. You can have seizures, both alcohol-induced and withdrawal-induced. Good times, huh?
I got the shakes already, so I'm...
Oh, you got the shakes. You're halfway there.
Yeah, I just need a little diarrhea, and I'm good to go, bro.
Did you ever have any substance history?
I drink, and I smoke a lot of weed.
Smoke a lot of weed?
Yeah.
Does it help with the movements or spasticity?
No, man, I just like getting high.
You just like the weed?
No. You know, the thing I always say about weed is it doesn't necessarily make me feel better. It just makes me forget. There's something wrong. And I just go for it. You know, I'm just trying to have fun. And so, yeah, I mean, there's some medical stuff, but it can go the opposite way too. If it's too strong, you get a little jittery, jittery. Yeah.
Yeah. The strength of the weed now it's concerning. I've seen a lot of serious reactions in some people from, I mean, there are plenty of people I know that use a lot of it and they're fine, but I've also seen some really significant reactions. Did I describe my reaction, my lightweight reaction to you guys on this show?
Is that when you smoked and then you had like a panic attack, right?
It was not a panic attack. I had what's called an anticholinergic delirium. Mm. I actually had no anxiety at all. Because I was very cool about it, given how miserable I was.
So wait,
and
what?
I had no high. I was just miserable. I took two hits with some of the cool kids, and I developed... I looked like you.
That's rough, bro.
And I kid you not, I could not control my body. I was my wife came over to me. She goes, "Sit down." I go, "I can't. I don't know how to sit down anymore." Right. And I went outside, and I had photophobia and dry mouth and dry skin, all the stuff that happens from anticholinergic reactions. I read about later that people over 65 were getting anticholinergic reactions from weed, that really? ER visits are up, and they're getting seizures too. I thought, which at the time I thought, I feel like I'm going to have a seizure. I need to go to the hospital. I thought that would be great for TMZ. They would love that.
They would love that, man.
Yeah. And I had weird time distortions. I was out there. I was having very calm conversations with myself, even though I was miserable.
Just freaking out.
I was not freaking out. I was not. You would think I would. I was not.
Some level of you was freaking out.
Yeah. Well, I was not happy.
The part of you was talking normal, like, ah, everything's fine. But you're like, this is insane.
No, because the conversation I had with myself was, oh, holy shit, I'm having an anticholinergic reaction. I know what this is. This is anticholinergic delirium. It lasts about 2 hours. I just got to sit out here and wait it out. It's going to be fine.
My girlfriend's not a smoker at all, and we gave her an edible, and it's kind
of... She had a reaction.
I thought I gave her palsy, man. I was oh, no.
Yeah, and I've seen severe manias in some people. But this one, mine, I was out there. The time thing was the most bizarre thing. I couldn't talk, and I couldn't really converse much, but my wife checked on me a couple of times, and I thought, okay, I'm just hanging out here. I'm going to sit here for 2 hours, then I'm going to go back to the party. And I was out there what felt like an eternity, and she comes out, and I go, all right, how long have I been here? I thought she was going to say an hour and a half. She goes, like 8 minutes? And I was like, oh, fuck, I got to get out of here. This I'm worse than I thought.
That's insane.
and because it was so miserable. And then she had me wait for her. I couldn't drive for 5 days. I couldn't drive a car. Yeah, I was messed up for a while.
Wow, man.
Yeah. So that's it for me and weed. That's it. I'm sorry. Here's Chris, 38-year-old male. Notice when I rub it out, I lost the sensitivity in the tip around the head of my penis after... What is he saying? People do not know to speak English anymore. After looking at the dark brown bowels of the internet, I came across the article called Manhood. They claim your nerves are damaged over time by clothing and can be healed by wearing penis sleeve. Is this true? Nah, come on. Also, I have an average penis. It's not that big. Would this even stay on when I go limp?
No.
Love you, Booth Boys. Look, I don't know what you've done exactly, the sensitivity on the tip.
Again, it's your body saying don't do it anymore.
Don't do it so hard. Yeah, here, there's a theme for this show. Let's just call this, your body says don't do it anymore.
Yeah, don't.
There's a lot of things that can cause this. If you're a bike rider, the pressure on the pudendal nerve from sitting on the bike seat all the time can do this. If you're a diabetic, if your sugars haven't been tightly controlled... it could be a million different things and nothing. But it's not that somehow you could have desensitized yourself by really vigorous activities.
So it's all in your head.
Maybe.
Actually the tip, but.
No, it's actually, right. It's you're right, the tip and the head.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, does weed and alcohol trigger traumatic memories? I've always had a icky feeling about something of happening growing up. I have memory gaps. I have a general ick feeling about my childhood. When I moved out of my parents' house, troubling memories and feelings started to come up about my father, who I've always felt unsafe around. I can barely make sexuals anymore with my genes either.
Hmm.
Can you translate that? Yeah, you're a language expert.
This is a new language.
I think you're saying that I can't have sex. Sex brings on high feelings of anxiety. Smoking and drinking don't give me relief. They make it worse. Is this real? I'm sure I've said this before. I'm not a big fan of the whole repressed memory notion. I don't feel that memories need to be re-evoked. I don't think that you can repress memories. It does happen, but I don't think you have to assume it is. All that really matters is what is your body experiencing now?
Right.
Do you have uncontrolled anxiety? Do you have parts of your brain that you can't include, you think it's traumatic and it's walled off somewhere. You need to be able to regulate your emotions holistically in an integrated fashion now. And so what you would do with this stuff is do something like EMDR or something, one of those techniques where you may or may not bring the memories back, but you'll just get into your body and bring all those feelings back in and regulate them.
And then you can start looking at them if you want to.
If you want to, or if you can, maybe you can't. I mean, memory is a very messed up thing. Have you ever had any distorted memories?
Not really. I mean, I feel pretty lucky in that way, but I mean, you could probably ask my girlfriend and she'd tell you, like, you forgot everything, you fuck. Like, no, but yeah, I mean, for the most part, I don't feel like I've lost.
Well, memory is, a friend of mine is an FBI agent and he had a specialization in eyewitness, right? In eyewitness stuff. And he used to do these trainings on eyewitness techniques and eyewitness sort of interviewing the eyewitnesses.
Yeah.
And he would open the eyewitness training by having a couple make a commotion on one side of the room and have three guys run in and abduct somebody and take them out.
Right.
And then he would ask everyone in the room what happened. And he said almost no one could accurately describe what actually happened.
Really?
They couldn't describe the clothing of the people that came in. They couldn't describe the race, the hair color. Mm. They'd leave out parts about the commotion at the beginning or didn't notice the commotion or misrepresented the commotion. Everything about memory is a recreation. You know, our memory is not a movie camera that plays. It's our brain recreating things and trying to make sense of the information that it retained. And we don't retain a lot many times. So it's, you know, the whole reliance on memory and I saw it, I know it happened.
Right.
No, it's biased by all kinds of things. It's distorted and recreated. So be careful with irrational certainty when it comes to memory.
I'm not messing with it.
Good. All right. Excellent. Guys, do we have any voicemails in there?
We do. This is from Joe.
Dr. Drew, Booth Boys, my name's Joe. I'm a mommy from Wisconsin, and I have a cum question. I just peed after having sex, and I swear it feels like there's just pee at the tip of my dick for minutes on end. No matter how much I push, no matter how much I just wait, it just always feels like it's there. 10, 20 minutes later, I can finally drain it out. What's that all about? I know the cum stored in the balls, all that good stuff, but like, can you shed some light on that? Also, touch my camera through the fence there. All right, love you guys. Bye.
That's a reference to an old video.
All right.
I like the way people like tormenting me with the testicles store the cum. That's awesome. So how many, you guys, we've heard this question a million times, right? Do you guys have the answers now? Anybody?
Sorry, I was just commenting to have ISO you saying tormenting me with their testicles. But sorry.
So you've heard this question a million different ways. I'm wondering if you guys still learn from what I've been telling you.
Oh, yeah. It's the semivessies.
No. You weren't listening to him. He said that he feels like he has to pee after he comes, right? And it persists for a while. The reason he could pee 10 minutes later is because he's reaccumulated urine in his bladder and he's ready to pee again.
Right.
There was not really much pee there to begin with.
Right.
It was just irritation of the urethra. You can have urethritis after sexual encounter. Even the semen itself can irritate the tip of the urethra sometimes. So it's a nothing. It's typically a zero. But if it's a new partner and you have persistent symptoms like that, you want to get checked for chlamydia.
Something else.
just be careful with that. What kind of stuff are you getting into in your comedy these days?
You know, I just filmed a special in January, so I'm like clean slate.
You're starting over.
Trying to rebuild the repertoire. And
yeah.
It's my fifth hour special I just recorded. So
when's it coming out?
Hopefully soon. It's still being edited, so I'm not sure yet. But I'm excited. You know, five is a pretty
it's amazing
good number, and I just feel like writing a new special is fun because it's just playtime and mess around and figure it out.
Is there a particular thematics you like to get into?
I mean, it's really based on my life, a lot of the stuff, and you know, just day-to-day occurrences and stuff like that, and everything I pulled from that. So I just gotta wait for shit to happen to me,
right?
And then I'll tell it on stage.
Yeah. So it's your mom's house. So I have to ask your mom's house type questions. Does the CP get involved in any way with your sexuality and your sexual ability to function sexually?
They call me the human vibrator, baby.
So it does get involved.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, I'm sure, you know, I like fucking, you know, You know, and if it does, it's the people I'm with or my girlfriend, you know, that just understand, you know.
Is there any accommodating that needs to go on, or is it?
No.
Not really.
I like to be pleasured.
Oh, how about that?
That's the accommodation. I'm very special needs in that way.
Do you get any special cooperation because of it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, I mean,
it's like, can you say, well, I can't do that. I need you to.
Yeah, I need you to help me. No, she knows. She still does it. It's nice.
Oh, that's nice. She sees through your bullshit, but she still does
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and that means even more, you know.
You have two kids now, right?
I do.
And their mom, is that relationship okay still?
Well, you know, we're divorced. It's been, you know, almost 10 years. Yeah, they live within 20 minutes of my house. I have 50% custody.
So you guys are co-parenting.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that working out okay?
Yeah, it's great. And we made it work around my tour schedule, so I get them the first half of the week, and then
nice.
Fly out on Thursdays usually. Perfect. And get them back Sunday night.
How old are they?
15 and 13.
Uh-oh, you're really getting into it.
Yeah. Yeah, the girl's 13, boy's 15, and... they're really good kids. Like, as far as teenagers can go, they're, you know, expected.
Have they heard your comedy?
You know what? I brought them for the first time to a weekend in Appleton, Wisconsin, and my son watched all the shows, and I asked him at the end of the week, like, what'd you think? He goes, oh, you're really funny, but I don't think Seika gets it, which is his sister.
Oh.
So then I asked her, I said, hey, what'd you think? She goes, first time was really funny, and the second time was just predictable, and then the third time, just boring. I was like, I kind of fucking stand an ovation, and you're like, that is boring.
Oh my God, that's so funny. But that's so teenage.
Yeah,
right?
It was perfect. You know, yeah. I wouldn't expect anything else from this person.
It's funny. Have you guys seen in the booth what happened to Bert's kids when they got exposed to his material? Did you ever see that at the beginning?
No, I don't think so. I know he's been taking them.
He's been taking them on the road. And, you know, I did his cooking show a couple weeks ago.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And he was saying that they had to pull him aside and go, Dad, dude, come on. We're actually scared, you know, with the way he'd conduct himself on the tour.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's changed now. He's on testosterone replacement. He's working
keto.
Out. He's keto.
Yeah,
he's lost 30 pounds or something.
Yeah. Have you seen his fucking shoulders, man? It's fucking...
That's testosterone.
It's what he always says. He's like, bro, check out these fucking shoulders.
But he... good for him. Well, let's see how long that lasts. But I'm amazed that he brought them in, because the first time it's kind of stayed with me. It was a couple of years ago when they first, I don't know if they saw a special or something. And he said they were really quiet during it. And it was, and they were a sort of a lot of the content. They were in the material. And Isla's the older one. I can't remember.
Younger.
Of them said to him, I think it was Georgia, said to him, is that what you've been talking about all this time? We thought you were like telling nice stories about us. Are you saying nice things? You've been saying that the whole time? Like, she was like, what? This is how you've spoken about me? Like, what? It was actually, she like couldn't process it. It sounded like.
I talk mad shit about my kids in my show. So I haven't let them watch the specials. So that when they saw me, I didn't do anything about them.
Well, this
so
is what I was
like,
kind of... Yeah, this what made me think about that. I wondered if you had some of that. How do you manage that? That's a... It's not an easy navigation.
Dead. Yeah, you know, you just try to, you know...
You want to get them as old as possible before you expose them to it, that's for sure. But I wonder... Here's what I wonder about. How do you deal with the consent issues? Like, do they need to consent to it in some way? And the answer is, how could they?
I sure hope not.
Well, but does that trouble? I was going to ask Bert about this too.
Yeah, I mean, that is.
Because they could feel resentful later and go, you didn't ask me if you could talk like that. It's like, but it was my life. You know, I was just talking about my life and you were a big part of it.
I would say if something's funny, it's hard to get mad about it. So, like, I have faith in the material that I'm doing that it's funny enough. Where, yes. And they're my kids, so they have my sense of humor. So oh, when they finally see it, they'll be like, okay, I get it.
They're okay,
like,
so yeah, they're funny too. So
yeah, they're
good.
Funny. Yeah, for sure.
Interesting. Are they interested in languages also? Have they got the family trait?
They're half Japanese. They both speak fluent Japanese.
Oh my God, that's wild. That is so wild. Good for you. I'm so jealous people that get two maternal languages going.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a game changer. Language is it's amazing just to travel the world. I mean, I've been to 44 countries and, you know, if you make the effort to say something in the native tongue, people really respect that and you can get so much further in another country.
To your point about others respecting it, I feel like it's disrespectful not to make an attempt to learn the basics. Wherever you're going, I tried to learn some Portuguese when I went to Portugal. Right. I've gotten weirdly preoccupied with language in my old age, and it started with me trying to get over long COVID. I had real bad fogginess and stuff, and I thought, I think if I work on language, it would get back. And I learned Greek because we were going to Greece. Oh. Cleared up my long COVID in 2 weeks. Coincidence? Awesome. I don't know. And then I just kept going. I was like, oh, I got it.
Sweet.
Language to me was always like, I got to go to French class.
Yeah. Right.
I thought, oh, no. I got to, thank God I did. And I got to really get it maîtrisé, as they say. I got to master this shit.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do another voicemail.
All right. Next up, we got Maya with a question about sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Hi, Dr. Drew. This is Maya, 22. Mm-hmm. People always say that sleep paralysis, they see shit. That's not how it is for me. When I have sleep paralysis, which is only from sleeping on couches, I can feel it climbing towards my lungs. Mm-hmm. And if I don't breathe through it, I'll start panicking, which, mm-hmm. I mean, once you feel your lungs falling asleep, you're kind of fucked, but curious about if that's normal or not. Keep your mind tight. Thank you.
Thanks, Maya. Ever had a sleep paralysis syndrome?
I haven't.
Any sleep hallucinations or terrors or anything?
When I was a kid, I had a few.
Some terrors?
Yeah. Just...
And if you have terrors as a kid, it's sort of, that's the group that tends to get the paralysis and the hypnagogic sort of hallucinations when they're waking up.
Well,
and stuff.
I smoke enough weed where I don't remember any dreams or anything.
So. It's not good. It's not good. You need those dreams. It's your brain healing itself. The REM sleep, that's the restorative part. Okay, part of the restorative cycle. No, many people don't see things when they have sleep paralysis. They just, in fact, that's the more terrorizing aspect. Mm-hmm. You wake up and you're paralyzed and you think you're awake. Like you're thinking and you're like, I can't move. What am I going to do? That's when people get very panicky. If you're in a sort of a dream and you're having a hypnagogic hallucination along with the paralysis, there's an alien lying on top of me. A ghost is having sex with me. These are sort of devils in the room. That very common kinds of imagery that people get. Again, the aliens are part of the hypnagogic thing. And you focus on that, and you're not worried so much about the paralysis.
Right.
Because the paralysis makes sense because something's lying on top of you. But if you're just kind of thinking you're awake, which you're not, because, again, the paralysis is because you're between sleep and wake, that's when people find it very, very, very uncomfortable. As far as your lungs go, you'll keep breathing. It feels maybe like you're not, and maybe it's kind of some hypoventilation where you're not comfortable at that level of breathing, but it's not like an ascending neuropathy, like a Guillain-Barré or something where you actually stop breathing. But the panic is not fun. Not fun.
Did she say it was from sleeping on couches?
She said she gets it when she sleeps on couches.
Well, maybe don't do that.
Maybe not. Maybe that's a good plan.
I'm not a doctor at all, but
really?
It just seems like logic.
Yes. Yes. Unless she wants these things to come on.
Oh, yeah. Well, there is that.
You could kind of try to master them. What is up with videos? What do you got there? Woke up with these weird iodine-colored. Why am I not seeing whatever she's talking about?
It's faint. I see it.
Yeah, I think it's this kind of like brownish-looking stuff here.
Okay.
Iodine stains.
Okay, and did she have it on the other side? Whoops. Lovely sound. Iodine stains in my face. She's turning her fingers over as it is there.
So
yeah, and then her mom said it was carrots. Is that what it said there in the Let's keep reading. What does it say down there? Google told me carrots. Yes, it could be carrots.
Really?
Yeah. Some people get orange discoloration of primarily the palm, but it's the thicker area. See why it's the stuff over the joints, which is a little thicker skin. That's the keratinized skin is where you tend to see this show up. And so the palms or the fingers. And that, you know, you have to eat a lot of carrots to get that, though. A lot of carrots.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, that was. Let's see another one.
The doctor told me that my kneecap doesn't align properly. I can move it this much, and it doesn't hurt. To me, it doesn't even look weird. It's just normal.
Uh-oh.
Is this normal? Can anyone else do it? Like, do it me if you can. Please.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be abnormal.
Okay, I was about to say, because I can definitely do
that. Yeah, there's different kinds of laxity that people can have, and you have to be careful with laxity, but it's not, you know, if you're, somebody who has to hold fourth position in ballet for a long time, laxity is an easy thing, a good thing. Mm-hmm. But if you're a tight end or a running back, laxity can get you hurt. What's up?
I think because I was like, you were saying, uh-oh. So I was like, uh-oh, what do you mean, uh-oh? But I realized,
well, I thought, uh-oh, because like, you know why, uh-oh? I thought she was going to take her kneecap and flip it around back. because then we got a problem.
Man, you've been here too long.
Yeah, I've seen some weird shit. Is there more, Chad? I'm fascinated by this. Do you like this? Are you cool with this, Josh?
I mean, it makes my stomach turn a little bit.
Okay,
but
good,
yeah,
good. Mission accomplished.
Okay, cool.
That's the end of that video. Here's one about sweaty hands.
Oh, yeah.
Yo, my hands just be sweating for no reason. I'm not even hot.
Yeah.
Just sweating. Like,
yep.
Bruh. I have...
I love her.
Eczema really bad, so...
Not the eczema. That's called hyperhidrosis. It can get really crazy bad where you can't even write because the ink starts running on the page.
Really?
People can't write with a pen. Because it drips onto the page. And people are very disturbed by it and embarrassed about it because if you go to shake someone's hand and they're all sweaty, it's kind of, oh, what's going on here? And people get weird about that.
For sure.
And there are treatments for this. There are very powerful prescription strength antiperspirants. Usually don't work. What people often go to, and Andy, you're looking thoughtful. Is this something you know about or worry about?
Oh, no. I was wondering, I was going to ask a question because she showed the back of her hand.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think that's just nothing's going on in the back.
No, it looked kind of interesting.
Here, let's see. If we go here, it shows the eczema on the back.
Oh, is that what that is?
Because that's where you get the eczema on the back stuff.
Yeah, not that hand, but the other hand.
All right.
The beginning.
Let's see.
Yo, my hands just be sweating for no reason. I'm not even hot.
Boom.
What'd you see?
You go back to
like her joints are off a little bit.
I don't know. Awesome. It looked like there was like loose skin or something. Yeah,
she does have a little bit of like again.
Yeah. What was
I'm
that?
Not,
that's normal.
I'm not even
that's
half.
Normal.
Yeah, okay. It's just her.
Huh. All right.
Mm-hmm. But
it's just her.
It's just her, man. but they because these antiperspirants don't tend to work. There is a treatment, and they go in and they clip the sympathetic ganglion in the armpit essentially, or sometimes they do it in the neck. And it works like crazy.
Really?
Yeah, it works like crazy. Yeah. People that get that done, if you go online and sort of see these communities of people that have had this done, you will find that they often find the sweating shows up elsewhere and they don't like it. It'll show up on their butt. It'll show up on their face. And so they get upset. And they feel weirdly disconnected from their body because that is where the sympathetic system and the autonomic system is where some of the feeling states are generated.
I would say if it's not like a really dire thing, don't fuck with it, because it's something else is gonna show up. Like you said, now you got a sweaty butt, and you're like, oh, this is way better than my hand sweating. You know.
To be fair, not everyone gets that. Sometimes they just get the dry hands. But to your point, I'm completely on board. What I always say, there's no free lunch in Mother Nature.
Right.
You fuck with nature, it will fuck with you.
I've had people, doctors suggest like. Fusing my wrist or doing something, and I'm like, no way we're doing that, because then what's the next thing that's going to pop up or the next? And it's just my body wants to be like that, so let's not try to stop it from doing that.
Can you straighten that wrist out, or is that just spastic?
I can.
Does is it hurt ever when it's
down? It does hurt. I mean, it's just tight. It's just been like that my whole life.
Do you do any physical therapy or anything?
I mean,
it,
I should, but I
don't. Well, sometimes it's just the easiest, as simple as kind of just what you're doing. Yeah, I'll do a little bit. That's all you got to do.
But just, you do that on an airplane, and the person next to you kind of freaks out.
Why? Because they think you're nervous and clinging clinging to the seat. It's interesting to me how lateralizing your stuff is.
Yeah,
it's
very
right-sided.
Very right-sided.
Yeah. Is there anything on the left? I can't even detect anything.
I mean, I definitely, my handwriting is terrible. Fine motor skills. So the
alternating movements are off, kind of.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not the guy to be carrying a pot of hot soup or anything.
No. No, thank you. Do you have any more videos on hand?
We do. So. Okay. Speaking of weird hands,
I would love to see a couple of talked folk too. I noticed Christina has been putting a bunch of those on her social media, and they were like exceptionally talked.
Well, I don't know how talked this girl is. Okay. Let's find out. Okay.
I can't. You guys are gonna have to read the print is too small at this distance.
It says POV, you have a weird autoimmune disorder where your hands get really swollen when they get cold.
That's sort of the, we've had this before. That's a relative of Raynaud's phenomenon. It's sort of a hyper, back to the autonomic system, there's hyper sensitivity of the vascular system and the periphery of the hand, and they can get red and white and blue, and it's often when they sort of put their hand in a refrigerator or something, it'll all of a sudden turn blue. And it can swell too. There can be something called reflex sympathetic dystrophy or Sudex. It's associated with something called Sudex atrophy, which is again something that happens in the way the autonomic nervous system is processing in the armpit area and the neck. And it can cause all kinds of weird autonomic dysfunction out in the hand. And pain is sometimes part of that. Did she say anything about pain in that little post?
I don't think so, no.
All right. Do you have any more voice messages?
Oh, yeah. We got a ton of those. Check this out.
All right. Oh. This is good.
Hey, Mommy. This is Jason calling from Texas. Quick question. So my girlfriend, she has a little bit of an odor down there. She's pretty hygienic. I always see her shower, usually twice a day. Everything's good. But I would describe it as like a BO. I'm not sure how to confront her with that or if I even should. But it really prohibits me from going down her. And she always asks, why don't you go down on me? And I don't know how to politely put that out into the air. That's pretty much it. Thanks. I'll be coming up in May.
Interesting. B.O. So that's not a vaginal smell so much. No. That's more of a skin smell. What would you do?
I mean, he says she showers twice a day. I don't know what else you got to do.
That's the point. It's not her, it's not her fault.
Right.
It's just what her body does. And what if you bought her some nice perfumes that you liked or something that were really strong? And
you don't want to be licking on that, though.
That's what he said. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And, you know, men get weird about vaginal odors. That we do. I think I always kind of upsets me. And women are they get very hurt by it. And they somehow men associate anything of an odor in that region with sort of dirtiness, and it has nothing to do with it. Nothing really at all. It's just the bacterial flora of the region, and it's that particularly inside the vagina is a very delicate.
It's an ecosystem.
It is an ecosystem. That's correct.
It can be thrown off pretty quickly.
Yeah. And then some of the bacteria produce scents and whatnot. And some people have their own sort of smell and stuff.
Right.
I've noticed that you sort of, you don't notice the smell of the people you love, I think.
Right.
I think there's something, I don't know if, well, here's an interesting theory. I don't know that this is, I'm just going to float this. You ready? Is being overly affected by another person's smell a mechanism of saying you don't match? Do you think? Because smells are supposed to give us information.
I could see that. I mean, smell is so powerful.
Primitive too.
Yeah. So that's really interesting.
It is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know of any evidence that that's true, but you always wonder that, like when you've taken care of little kids when you had your kids.
Yeah.
Eventually, you start not loving, but the smell of the poop becomes
Yeah, you
part
know
of the baby. That, it's like part of it's not. It can overwhelm you, mind you, but
like the smell of milk that's spilled in their neck, like as a odor.
Yeah,
it's not a pleasant smell, but you're like, oh, I love you.
Yes, yes. For sure. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, yeah.
And now I don't know if that maybe that develops in response to you loving them, or maybe that's part of the fittedness of your loving them. Well, I don't know. That's kind of interesting. All right, more voicemail. See, we go to interesting places with this.
How about a lady for this one?
Yes, please.
Here's Erica.
You know how I love that.
Hey, Dr. Drew.
Erica.
It's Erica. I'm from Kentucky.
Mm.
And I had a question. So after I masturbate, my butthole, like, it clenches and it gets really, like, it hurts.
Mm.
And it's like, it doesn't go away for, like, an hour or so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that's about. Can you just tell me what that's about? I am in a wheelchair, and I have spastic dysplasia. If you could clear that up, thanks.
So spastic dysplasia, of what? I usually think that being, there's more words that usually come after that.
Right. Well, if she's in a chair.
But at least she has spasticity in lower extremities.
Right.
We can at least conclude that. And you want to handle it? Because you deal with spasticity.
Yeah, but my butthole doesn't hurt.
After ejaculating?
No.
A lot of guys get that, though. It's very common.
Really?
It's called a pubococcygia spasm. Men kind of get it down towards the taint and into the balls and stuff. This sort of weird, achy, visceral feeling. You ever had that?
I have. Yeah. I got a vasectomy, so there's a little bit of that after.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a good version of that. Yeah. But I'm imagining that if you have sort of a generalized spasticity in that area, the pubococcygia goes to the butthole and can include that muscle in a weird way. So that makes sense to me. It's all part of the same thing. It's the pelvic floor spasm.
So it's clenching up. And
it's clenching up and not releasing. Exactly. I don't know if you take anything for your spasticity, but if you do, that might work for this too. I don't know if you have any physical therapy for your spasticity, but there are pelvic floor specialists, people that do pelvic floor physical therapy to help you with that. So really, again, our female voice messages are always fascinating. Give me more.
Hey, Dr. Mommy. This is Santana. I am calling from Louisiana, originally from Jamaica.
Mm.
But, Dr. Drew, I have a quick question. Well, I just had my 2-year-old son a couple years back. And since I got the IUD, the Marina, my sex drive is no longer here. What should I do? And how would I go about getting my sex drive back up for me and my husband?
All right.
Thank you, guys. Have a wonderful day.
Well, great question. Any ideas? Yeah.
I mean, what did she say? She had a birth control device in? Is that
yes,
what she
an
said?
IUD.
I mean, is that easily taken out now?
Yes.
Procedure?
Yes.
Or,
yes.
I mean, so.
So, very good.
That's probably what you got to do.
I like Josh goes more towards letting nature take care of itself.
Right.
So, Marina is an impregnated device. It has a lot of progesterone in it. And these high potency progesterone, even with a local measure like an IUD, can be systemically absorbed. And one of the common side effects is no libido. So, there's three things for you. A, you can get IUDs that are just copper that aren't impregnated with progesterone. So if you want an IUD, which is the intrauterine device, get one put in that doesn't have progesterone. They're better, they're more effective when they have progesterone. Don't do it, do something else. You're very sensitive to progesterone. By the same token, if you go on the birth control pill, most of those function with high dose progesterones. You won't like that either, it'll do the same thing to you. So that sort of copper 7 or something like that, one of those sort of non-impregnated IUDs would be a good option for you, number one. Number two, if you're breastfeeding still, when you're breastfeeding, that's God's way of making sure you don't have one baby on top of the other.
Mm.
And one of the things that goes down is libido with breastfeeding.
That's
sometimes, not always. And then number three, some women just have a drop in libido after pregnancy. Dramatic. Again, it's God's way of making sure we don't have babies on top of each other so we can have time to take care of these kids.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, you know, the thing that you want to deal with, that you can deal with, that's influencing everything is that progesterone. You want to get rid of that. So I agree with that. I agree with Josh. Other voice messages.
Hey, Mommy, this is James. About 2 weeks ago, I ate a stripper's ass a little bit, and now I have pain in my upper right abdomen, and my pee is dark, even though I'm drinking a lot of water. Do I have hepatitis? I'm 27 and otherwise totally healthy. Just wondering what I should do.
Really?
Thanks. Love you.
Very interesting. Ate a stripper's ass.
A little bit.
A little bit.
A little bit.
A little bit. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah.
That's really funny. Well, oral fecal contamination is a main means by which people get infectious diseases across the world. Usually it's through feces contaminating well water. But you must have dealt with that. Oh my God. Yep. Did you see a lot of the, you know, worms and diarrheas and all kinds of stuff?
For sure. I got some myself.
What'd you get?
I had just
bad diarrhea
for weeks and throwing up, and like it was bad. I had to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
But then the neighbor lady, she came over with like something from Senegal, and he says, gargle with this, spit it out. It was the most bitter thing I've ever tasted. Like the next day, it was gone. Like,
weird.
So like Western medicine didn't even touch it.
Wow.
I gargled a little shot of this shit, and it was like, that also changed my like perspective on things. Like,
yeah.
Holy shit. Like,
wonder what that was.
Yeah, it was so bitter, though. It was disgusting.
Wow, interesting. Yeah. Well, so did any worms or anything, too, which is another thing you can get in these regions?
I mean, I'm sure I've had
worms of one type
or
another.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they're very common, way more common than people understand. So hepatitis. Hepatitis, yes, you can get dark urine, and yes, you can get right upper quadrant pain, but usually with the dark urine, you get jaundice, though, of course, you can miss the jaundice if you're the one trying to detect it. No one else is seeing it. But hepatitis, you're sick. You have particularly hepatitis A, which is what you get by doing this behavior, and you'd be fever and sick. You'd be really sick. Now, that could come in a minute. That could be maybe coming. It'd be interesting to get a follow-up from you to know if that did happen. Yeah. But I think you... why are you calling this show? Why aren't you calling a doctor? Get checked out. Dark urine is never good. And I worry about kidney function with that. It may have nothing to do with your behavior there with the stripper. Hmm?
And avoid licking buttholes of strippers.
Of strangers.
Don't stigmatize
strippers.
Just strangers in general. I'm sorry, strippers.
William, what's going on?
Hey, Hitler.
Hey, man.
I'm a 24-year-old alcoholic. Mm-hmm. I've got 69 days clean.
Congratulations.
I'm freshly pissed on and beat. Thank you. And I'm in a recovery home and working on issues with alcoholism and childhood trauma, as well as other recent traumas. I'm struggling with opening up to my girlfriend and being honest with her and others. Mm. I find myself compulsively lying a lot to really everybody in my life.
Yeah.
I love her and I want to salvage that relationship as well as the other relationships in my life.
Okay.
Tried 12 Benadryl, but do you have any other advice?
How long have you been with her?
A little over a year and a half.
Okay. And what led to you wanting to get sober?
I've been trying to get sober for a couple years now. In January, I went about 6 months without drinking, and I relapsed pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what inspired me to get into a recovery home.
Okay. You going to meetings?
Yeah, we have daily meetings here, sometimes twice a week.
Are you going to?
I'm trying to go to AA meetings as well.
Okay. 90 meetings in 90 days?
We had a 30-day restriction here that I just got off of.
Okay.
And I'm in kind of a small town, so it's hard to make meetings because you got to travel at least 45 minutes to make some. You want to make one every day.
Zoom is available around the clock, right?
Hmm. Yeah, which I just got my phone back, so I'm going to be using that as well.
Well done. And then you get a sponsor, and the sponsor will start kicking your ass a little bit on the line. He'll start checking you every time you do this and start challenging you, start slowly getting you to change your behavior. What kind of stuff you've been lying about?
Really kind of small stuff. I had I had the inclination to go and relapse a few days ago, and one of the people here actually caught me. And I had told my girlfriend that I was on the phone with my mom and dad, when in reality I was being talked out of going and relapsing.
Okay.
And I just felt a lot of shame and felt the need to lie.
Right. Okay. So is your lying mostly to maintain the using and hide the using?
It was when I was using. Now it seems to make myself seem like in a better light or not disappoint others.
Yeah. Okay. Well, part of being able to stay sober is living a certain kind of life, right? You've got to be a certain kind of person. You've got to lead a certain kind of life. And that includes something called rigorous honesty. If you start bullshitting, you'll start bullshitting yourself. And you'll start coming up with good reasons and convincing yourself there's plenty of reasons to use, or somebody's full of shit, you're entitled, whatever. You're thinking, because a big part of addiction is fucked up thinking, right? Called stinking thinking.
And yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And that thinking gets influenced by your lying. And so to straighten that out, you got to get straight with yourself and everybody else and just be constantly rigorously confronting reality on reality's terms. That doesn't mean you have to lay everything out for everybody all the time. It means you have to be committed. You may not do it perfectly, but be committed to starting to live a certain kind of life. And you've been living a different kind of life for a long time. And so it's going to take a bit to kind of get used to this. And ultimately it becomes not only a habit, it becomes self-fulfilling because you start getting rewards from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you got to do some meetings.
Awesome.
You need that sponsor. You need the community and the sponsor. You need to find a group of guys somehow. I'm sorry you're in a small town, but you need a group of guys that you can trust, that you can download on a regular basis. All your guilt and shame and whatever bullshit is on your mind, you need to be able to take it to for sure a sponsor, but I kind of get the feeling you need a little community of or men. Would that be helpful to you?
Yeah, probably.
Of recovering men that have also were bullshitters, you know, and know what that is, and don't blame you for it. They just because it's your disease, man. You got an illness. It's like it's hard. Yeah, it's not easy. It makes you distort things. It makes you lie. I always tell everyone, William, that you know I have peers that get all upset when their patients lie to them, you know, about using or whatever. And I go, look, if my patients didn't lie to me, their diagnosis would be in question. I wouldn't wonder, do they have addiction or not if they weren't lying? And my job, because you lose track of the truth. My job, you should see what heroin addicts do, man. They really lose track of the truth. My job is to intuit what's really going on in your heart and bring it out into the open. And that's a certain skill set. And that's what these guys would do for you if you had guys that been where you've been, if you can find that group. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
Listen, don't beat yourself up. It's a hard illness. I'm glad you want to get sober. Congratulations on being in a safe environment. The goal is to surrender. You're still fighting a little bit. Surrender, okay? Yeah? You hear me?
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
You know what I mean, right? By surrender to the process here, just give.
Yeah.
You're still. Your brain has a disorder, and you're relying on that brain to make all the decisions. It doesn't make sense. You can't do that. It won't. It's one day you will, but not right now. Right now, it'll make you lie and do all kinds of bullshit. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and that's definitely where I'm at right now.
Yeah. Surrender. Now, one other thing. You said you wanted you to salvage this girlfriend relationship. She must go to Al-Anon because you're going to be growing a lot. And if she doesn't grow also, she's going to hold you back and you will relapse. So she must go to Al-Anon.
I understand.
Okay?
I understand.
All right, buddy. Good luck.
Thank you so much, Drew.
All right, you got it.
Piss on me and beat me.
Yeah, man. That's another reference to your mom's house stuff. It's a greeting. It's like we have like 30 different alohas
here. Everybody has something different to say.
Although we did not hear "You Bet I'll Be Coming Up in May" today. We did not hear that. I used that on Susan the other day for something I really wanted to do, and it worked perfectly. It's if you use these alohas right, they are quite impactful. I think that's about it. Is there anything else you guys want to deliver to me before I wrap this up?
I think that's all I got for you.
Got it all. Well done. Yeah. We ran the cycle here. Thank you, Booth Boys. Thank you, Josh. A pleasure to meet you. Congratulations on all your success.
Thank you.
It's very cool, and enjoy the stand-up tonight. You here for a couple of days? Or
yeah, five shows here.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah, man.
Does the movement affect your ability to do all that kind of stuff? Do I have that kind of stamina for it?
I've been doing 200 shows a year for 20 years.
The answer is no, it doesn't. It does not bother you.
Get out of my way. Here I come.
Yeah. All right, my friend. Where else do you want people to go?
Just joshblue.com for my tour schedule, and then Josh Blue Comedy on all social media.
And will they find the specials up
there? Specials on Amazon Prime.
Fantastic. Yeah. All right. Awesome.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Josh. We'll see you all next time.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation of the Dr. Drew After Dark podcast or interaction on the DrDrew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or physician medical advice or direction per se. You must always follow your medical professional's advice and direction. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Please understand, I am not playing the role of physician in this environment per se. I'm educating. I am a licensed physician with specialty boards in American Board of Internal Medicine and American Board of Addiction Medicine.